Oh, hi there. Glad you're here. You've caught me as I'm relaxing by a nice roaring fire, enjoying some much-needed rest and relaxation as we come to the close of yet another year of CMDA's Student Pulse Podcast. It's been a great year with compelling guests and wonderful, inspiring conversations. And although I wish I could share again in full the many conversations I've had with our guests, I can only share a couple of excerpts from this past year, and so I would invite you, as this is our year-in-review show, to sit back, watch, listen, and enjoy these clips. And, you know, I'd encourage you to go well beyond the clips to find the full interviews of these guests and many of the other great guests we've had this past year and in the many years before. Thank you for, again, making this podcast, video and audio, such a success by liking it, following us, and sharing with your friends. Have a blessed and Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Helping students and healthcare professionals not just survive, but thrive with a purpose. This is the CMDA Student Pulse Podcast.
Now, but the lie that I think we often hear is, well, if you tell people, they're not, you know, they're going to judge you, or they're going to think less of you. Gary, talk about that. How do you find those safe people? How do you find a community that as somebody who may be struggling with any of these issues we've been addressing, how can they find a safe person, a person they can trust?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a great point. The two things that people often dismiss and disregard, the verse that Melissa quoted was James 5:16 about confess your sins to one another, pray for each other that you might be healed. We dismiss that so often because we feel like, well, that doesn't really apply to me because I have such massive trust issues because of these things that have happened to me in the past. And also these might happen to me in the future. But the person who's saying that doesn't take into account that everybody has trust issues. Now, some people have massive reasons for trust issues, like they've been horribly violated and those kinds of things. We're not minimizing that, but the prescription for healing is still community. It's still finding those places. So the two things that people wrestle with most is what you just said, that people will judge me, people won't see me the same way, but also they're going to run their mouth about me, they're going to gossip about me. And sadly, both of those things have happened in many people's experience connected to the church in some way, or they've heard about it happening with loved ones or whatever. And so our ministry is primarily to the church. It's primarily to Christian leaders. It's equipping them to develop environments where these kinds of bands of brothers, bands of sisters, where safety is something that is expected and that gossip is something that is held up. Just, I mean, God finds a gossip to be an abomination. He finds it to be absolutely disgusting, and it rips and tears at the fabric of trust in the church. And then in addition to that, this idea that people will now see me differently, what I've experienced, though, I felt that way for a long time. But what I've experienced over and over and over again is that people who I begin to open up to, and of course that's done with some wisdom. I'm not just spilling my guts to the person who shakes my hand as I walk into the church, right? They're like, you know, the greeter. but rather, that's not the place to do it. But rather, we need to find that in our men's group or women's group or our small group or whatever. We need to find that band of brothers, band of sisters that we can open up to. And what I found over and over again is that men and women are drawn to people who will be open and vulnerable, and as they share their story, it starts to humanize their struggle and how they got into the mess that they're in, and the addiction or whatever else. And so I think that it's critical that we are willing to obey what the scriptures teach us about finding those places. But then also it's critical on the other side that the church, that we as Christians become the kind of people that are trustworthy, both in terms of refusing to gossip, maintaining someone's confidence, but also making sure that we don't pull back from them. And nothing is worse than someone sharing deep, painful things about sexual abuse or sexual sin, especially sexual stuff, because there's so much shame associated with that, but other things too. They share this stuff with somebody, they open up, and maybe they even got a pretty decent response from that person. Maybe there was compassion there. They're not worried about gossip. They're not worried about feeling condemned by them. But then that person never brings it up again. They never check in with them again. They never, you know, they might see each other, but it's just nothing that's ever brought up. Well, obviously, that person confessing that is not, like, this is an ongoing issue. This is an ongoing healing process. So when someone brings something to us, it's really rough and painful. We need to have enough security in ourselves and in who we are in Christ to be able to say, hey, I'm so proud of you for sharing this with me. I know that took a lot of courage. And I want to walk with you in this place. I want to be a resource for you when you're struggling or even when you're not. Can we, you know, that's, again, that's where that band of brothers where they're and sisters, where we're doing this together weekly on a regular basis. And then there's communication even beyond our group time where there's encouragement along the way.
I think it's a cool story that I want you to share with our audience about this patient encounter that you had almost immediately after this opportunity to get that training.
Right. It feels kind of divine in the sense that I had the preceptorship. Mm-hmm. I got to practice these skills with real patients. And then I immediately went into an elective rotation in a family med clinic out kind of in more rural areas of Washington. And it was great because I got to learn how to have these conversations with preceptors. Like, how do you go about telling your preceptor that, you know, you care about spiritual care and you want to pray for their patients? Mm-hmm. I think there was a learning curve there as far as how to have that conversation, and something that I won't dive into the details necessarily mm-hmm. with, but I think something that stood out to me as I was beginning to learn how to have these conversations with patients was a particular patient story. And it went something like this. We were seeing people in the family med clinic. We weren't in the hospital this day. And the attending was briefing me on this patient, said something about how the patient had kind of been difficult in the past, and I was going in to see them, and essentially good luck. nice. And I went into the room knowing that it was something benign, like hypertension follow-up or diabetes follow-up or something like that. Anyway, I went into the room, and the patient was kind of, you know, an older woman, kind of, you know, had a lot of complaints about the world, what was going on with her health. And we kind of began to chat a little bit more. And eventually, you know, I asked them, how is this illness impacting you? And she said, oh, it's been stressful. And I said, mm-hmm. how do you manage these stressors? And she says, you know, well, I pray and I try to, you know, I try to trust God through these things. Mm. And then that kind of opened up a conversation about the church that she was going to and what that was like. And at the end of the visit, I had said something along the lines of this, which is, you know, Mrs. So-and-so, it's been great being able to talk to you a little bit more. Something that I like to offer all my patients, if they find it helpful, is prayer. And I was wondering if I could pray for you. Mm. And the second after I said that, she just started sobbing. Mm. And I handed her a tissue. And I said, you know, why are you crying? You know, what's going on? She said, there's so many providers that I see that just look at me and they see an illness. You know, they see a problem and they're thinking about, how do I solve this problem? She said, but you really care about me and you care about how I'm doing. And it's hard to find that.
One of the things that I know is super important in the beginning of this process is that you, the patient, have all the information that you need. But it came so quickly and it was so terrifying. Like the first chemo, there was a lot of talk about if the port ever comes, he had to have a pump that he wore home for 48 hours. And then we had to go back to the hospital and remove it. And there was a lot of talk about, you know, if the pump were to come disconnected, this is what could happen. And it was terrifying. Like the chemo would go in your body. And anyway, and I'm sure that's a total reality. But Mike said to her, how many people have you known that that's ever happened to? And she said, none ever.
Okay.
And so it sort of helped us listen better. Like, we have to hear this information and it's really important. So pay attention, but relax.
But it's hard, isn't it? Because you're stunned, you're in shock. It's coming at you a mile a minute. I mean, in terms and vocabulary that you have to all of a sudden become familiar with, and procedures and protocols that are completely new and novel to you. Standard care for those who are, you know, providing it, they do, you know, they go through this time after time, but this is completely brand new. And then you mentioned on top of that, the insurance issues. I mean, this is just a lot of stuff, a lot of weight and pressure coming at you all at once very quickly. How did you and your family bear under that? I mean, how did it affect you and your faith?
I'm sorry. Well, I think the thing that we both learned right off the bat was that Christians are not very good comforters to other Christians.
Why do you say that?
Yeah. They're scared too, and I understand that. Oh, my apologies. They're scared too, and I understand that. And they don't know what to say, and I understand that too. And they're uncomfortable, and they want to get uncomfortable. But what they don't realize is they can't even imagine how scared you are and how uncomfortable you are. And so go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask, I'd love for you to share, were there examples of people who comforted well and help us understand what that would look like if you saw
it? They asked questions. They asked questions. You know, they didn't say, how are you? Because that's an unanswerable question. The best way to phrase that, which I loved so much, was what's it like to be you today? Because that's the other thing about this. We could wake up and have Mike could be in awful shape. And by noon, he felt so much better. So if you only asked us first thing in the morning, the answer would have been terrible. Or chemo put him down for 4 or 5 days. But as soon as that was over, he went straight back to work. He worked until 2 days before he died. And he did not want anyone to know he was sick, which was hard for me. You know, he was really freaked out about losing his hair, not because he minded being bald, but he didn't want to look like a cancer patient. And he didn't for a long time. Everyone would say, gosh, he looks so good for what's going on. And we sat down together and we said at the very beginning of this, how are we going to navigate this? We had heard about a case with Matt Chandler, who's a pastor in the Dallas area, who had brain cancer, and they told no one. They didn't tell their congregation. And we heard him talk about that. And he said, you know, we don't know if that was the right way to do this or not. That's the way we did it.
Okay.
And so I said to Mike, do you want to do this publicly or do you want to do this privately? Because we are part of a large, large Christian community. We've lived in the same house for 25 years. We went to the same church for 30 years. Our kids went all through the schools. And he said, if it were up to me, I would go sit in my chair and not take treatment in a month. And in 1 month, this would all be over. But it's not up to me. And because I am a writer and a speaker, he said, I'm pretty sure we're going to have to do this publicly. And so we determined from the get-go that we were going to talk about what this did for our faith. And we wrote a caring bridge. And I have heard from so many people how they felt like that caring bridge. First of all, they felt more connected to us and they could pray better for us. But they also felt like they were invited in to two people of deep faith, very publicly, facing this challenge. And so when you ask, how did we bear up against it? Part of it is we invited our community in. We invited our community in. And I would write the caring bridge, and then Mike would take it and tell me that I couldn't say this and I couldn't say that. I could get a little snarky. So he would take the snark out of it. Okay. But we had an outline that we followed. We talked about the medical. We talked about the spiritual. We talked about what we were reading and listening to. and we talked about prayer requests. And I had more people say, I'm loving reading the same thing you're reading, even if it's a mystery or even if it's a this. And so I think that was probably the most helpful thing that people did, was follow the caring bridge and come in from that way. But when I say not very helpful, I'm talking more about personal encounters. For example, a lot of what we heard in the beginning was, but God can do the impossible. And that is a true statement. It's also very unhelpful under the circumstances.
You live your faith out on display, it appears to me, and are able to boldly, you know, be a Christ follower in the spaces that you walk and in the spaces that you inhabit. I imagine there's probably some trainees who feel like, you know, I'd rather just kind of live, kind of fly under the radar, kind of be a little bit more stealthy, maybe a little gun shy as to how they might be able to confidently live their faith out in medicine, fearing some kind of repercussions and such as they are. What would you say? How would you encourage them? What would be the next step you'd say to help them live out more boldly and confidently their faith within the vocation of medicine?
Very good question, and not an easy one to answer.
No,
but I want to remind the students and residents and everybody listening that the concept of having a hospital for this started within the Christian communities. And the first recording of history of hospital as we know it was by Saint Basil the Great, one of the Cappadocian fathers. And beside all his responsibilities as a bishop, he opened the first hospital and put the, just take care of the sick and the suffering. There were no antibiotics, no painkillers, you know, but so it's a Christian concept. Number two, don't get into debates and arguments. And nowadays there are arrows floating in the air, you know, pro-life and pro-choice and Democratic and Republican and all these dichotomies that divide us and create enemies more than friends. So don't get into useless debates. Like Paul tell Timothy, don't get into useless arguments, you know. So number three, focus on the commonalities. And, you know, share with people what helped you through that difficult time. You fell sick before your exams and you prayed and, you know, share real stories of your faith and invite them for a meal. Bring them to the Bible study at homes that CMDA holds all around our campuses. And dinner is always free and usually pizza.
Well, you've got their attention when you said free.
So kindness. You know, somebody is overwhelmed and they need help in moving their apartment or whatever. Show kindness and go and participate in this. And you don't have to be a theologian. You don't have to be well-read. Though, I encourage you to read the Bible every day. It's the only source of wisdom. No matter, you know, knowledge is something, but wisdom is something else.
Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time. CMDA's Student Pulse podcast is a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the organization. CMDA is nonpartisan and does not endorse candidates or political parties for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members.